I wonder if you've ever formed an unlikely friendship with someone of different age, interests, background, beliefs even. Well, see if you can beat this. Tony Doherty is a priest. He's from Sydney, grew up here, Lane Cove River, all that stuff. He's in his 80s. Elsa Piper is an actor. She's from Melbourne. She's decades younger. She was born in the bush. And yet, out of the blue, they began an email correspondence that blossomed into a fierce friendship in which they helped each other through various travails. They've told the story mainly through their letters and emails in a new book called The Attachment. And Elsa and Tony join us in the studio. Good afternoon.
Hi, Richard.
Good afternoon, Mr. Glover.
Tony, this starts with you. You send an email out of the blue to a person whose book you've read.
Exactly. In fact, in another city, I'd never heard of her. She's famous, of course, but I'd never heard of her. from my quiet life. And it was a sort of, it began when Sandy Gore,
there's another actor, yeah.
Sent me a copy of the book, knowing that I was interested in the Camino, the walk in Spain to Santiago. And and she knew that Elsa, another friend of hers, had walked in Spain. So she sent me Elsa's book, which I was a bit turned off about, to be frank. Sitting across Spain didn't look like recreational reading to me.
I should explain. Elsa's book, it's got a gimmick to it. She does this pilgrim walk, but she has all these, Melbourne actor friends, and she gets them all to give her $50 to carry one of their sins across Spain, which is an old medieval practice, and she does it for the fun of it.
Yes, I thought that was outside the union protocols, actually, but that really wasn't the reason that attracted me to the book. It was really, I have to say quietly here, that it was a compelling read for me about Spain, about the walk, and, of course, had this intriguing twist to it about taking somebody else's sins. So I wrote to her, not wanting to sort of butter a toast too much, that I objected to her moving into my game. And not only that, but accepting money for it and getting free overseas trips. I thought this was outrageous. So
it's a bit Chaucer, isn't it?
It's called
a bit the Pardoner's Tale, isn't it?
So anyway, it did capture me because, yes, this woman does write. She tells her story in a very compelling fashion. And so I wrote to her.
Yeah.
Fool that I am, I wrote to her.
And Elsa, you wrote back.
I did. I was I am a letter writer. I love writing letters, and I was thrilled with every letter I got from the book, but I was a bit kind of fascinated by the idea of a priest because Tony said to me, have any theologians spoken to you about this? And no one had. So I was kind of interested because there were things like simony, which is the thing of taking money for the sorts of things I was doing and whether or not that was a sin in itself. So it was a chance to start a conversation about some things that interested me because I'd left Catholicism, 1,000 years ago. But I didn't quite take into account the level of curiosity that Tony had about all things, about theatre, about actors, about all sorts of things. And indeed, I didn't understand the level of curiosity I had about his world. I mean, I've never forgotten the first time after we'd come to meet each other, the first time I ever went to the presbytery and went inside a presbytery. I'd never set foot inside a presbytery before. It was like, there were all manner of what seemed to me mysterious things about being in conversation with a priest, which, of course, as time went by, I mean, I made the mistake I hate people making about myself. I'd thought of him as a priest. As time went by, he became a person. And I suppose he thought of me as a writer or an actor. And as time went by, we became really open friends. And the letters mean you can be a bit more sort of prying maybe than you would
in conversation.
Face to face. Yeah.
Well, although I think it's a book about, I thought it was a book really about two things, curiosity you mentioned, and really listening. People often say these days that the art of conversation is dead, and part of the reason it's dead is people just prattle on and they don't listen to each other. And this book is a great example of what happens if you can still yourself for a sufficient time to listen. And so you really listen to each other in these letters, and there'll be a letter from Tony and he'll mention something absolutely in passing, and Elsa will have the sense to say, Tell me more about that. And then you return the favour, Tony. You really listen to each other. It's a very exciting thing to witness two people doing. And if you do it, it leads to amazing conversations and amazing places and this really deep friendship.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think Tony is skilled at listening because he's had to in his professional life. But actually as an actor, if you've got any chops for it, it's really more about listening than talking. But one of the things is, I think, and I'm really guilty of this, that you're often formulating your response as you're listening. And with a letter, you know you don't have to do that because you can just attend to the words on the page and you can think about your response later. And that, I don't think that the responsibility of having a response is a good responsibility to take on board. The responsibility is to attend, isn't it? You know, Mary Oliver says, attention is the beginning of devotion.
Oh, okay. Yeah. This is your joint favourite poet who you talk about a lot.
I love her more.
Yeah.
I love her more. I had her first.
Just to move from Oliver for a moment, otherwise this whole program will be occupied with Oliver.
Yeah, no one's ever heard of it. I've never heard of it. So, you know, no one's ever heard of it. So.
But what I read yesterday was a phrase that came out of the Shona people in Zimbabwe. They greet one another by saying hello. The response to that is, I am here if you are here. And the response to that is, I am here. Now, in a sense, to be here, to be present to one another, I think is the art of what you're calling and we're calling listening. It's actually, and therefore, do letters provide a bit more space and distance and time and ability to put some nuance into what you're going to say? I think they did, for me anyway.
But I noticed that the letters are not about you putting forward yourself, either of you. It's always about asking questions of the other, which the other then answers and then comes back with their own questions. That's the form of almost every conversation. It's a very exciting thing to witness and to realise how rare it is actually in a
I'm not even sure I recognise it. I mean, thank you for the comment. That's a very, very positive comment. It's a, but that's somebody who's read them and feeding back to us what you read. Thank you.
Alsa Piper and Tony Doherty here. Alsa, when you told all your crew that you'd formed a friendship with, sorry, Tony, an 80-something Catholic.
Let's say three.
Let's say three. It could be worse. It could be nine. So, I've formed a friendship with an 83-year-old Sydney priest. How does that go down?
Pretty weird. Everyone used to say to me, what are you talking to that old priest about? But my husband was sort of less surprised because he knows about my love of silence and withdrawal. And he'd always said to me, you know, one of these days I'm going to lose you. You're going to go into the convent. So he was, I mean, we were both.
We wouldn't have you anyway.
That's exactly right. I mean, I think one of the reasons people were surprised is that the other difference that isn't so obvious, but we realised through the course of the letters, is that Tony spent his whole life inside an institution and I've spent my whole life outside of everything in a weird way. I mean, I was in a marriage, you know, for 28 years and that's an institution, but actually I've never been part of a hierarchical structure for any length of time.
Yeah, actors don't have a proper job.
No, we don't have anything much. And writers have even less, but it's that really struck me, you know, that he had this tradition behind it. Of course I've got a tradition of storytelling because actor, writer, director, you know, that's storytelling. But Tony had a hierarchical structural organisation within which he'd had to learn to move. And that was one of the things that I think actually was behind the questions that a lot of people asked me was this person who's, you know, got this kind of almost stereotypical role to play in the world, what the hell would you say to them? You know, because we know what that's going to be. And of course, Tony, you know, lives unpredictability, frankly.
But it's also, as you said, it's seeing the person behind the dog collar or the person behind the stage makeup. Alsa Piper and Tony Doherty here, we're talking about the attachment. I said at the beginning that you both helped each other through some travails, and there was a big travail in the course of this early friendship for both of you. And Tony, the travail for you, I suppose, was just the realisation that all this material was coming out about sexual abuse in your church, and it just ripped the heart out of you at a point that left you floundering.
It was devastating, and it... By the way, it was devastating then when we wrote the letters, but it's even the momentum has even increased exponentially, in fact. And it's a time of a time which almost forces you to reflect upon the principles of what you're doing and what is there to hold on to, what needs major surgery. And let me say very publicly that we have to face major surgery at this stage. No sort of pleasant massage or pink pills are going to get us through this. The church is facing a very critical time. So that has been the waters in which we've been swimming for several years. Mm-hmm. And it was the sort of background in which, look, I found myself saying a bit emotive, this, a bit dramatic, but I said to Ailsa, why do you want to get into correspondence with a priest in a profession which is just about the same as a sleazy drug seller? Now, that sounds dramatic, but in fact, it did exercise my mind a great deal.
You felt the guilt of the whole church on your shoulders.
Exactly. I mean,
poisoned by it, sullied by it.
Yeah, the wave after wave of headlines, which are unending. I mean, even now, frankly, to introduce myself to a stranger and they say, what do you do? I'm a priest. Suddenly there's, whether it's in my mind or theirs, I'm not sure, but a whole range of assumptions begin to descend upon you. In fact, those assumptions aren't recent ones either. I mean, I've been, I must say, wrestling with those ideas for years. People presuming, as when they know you're a priest, what you think. What you believe, what areas to avoid. They think they know how you make your moral decision, and it's so far away from the truth of the matter. It's funny, but those stereotypes and those generalizations that are made, well, in a sense, on an actor, on the work that you do, Richard, you know, perhaps in the same way, but they find their they're cloying, they're overpowering in my way. And so I have been struggling with that sort of issue about being a genuine, real adult in this privileged position. I'm proud to be a priest. I think it's probably one of the... I don't think I could have moved in a more satisfying sort of direction in my life. There's none of that disappointment in what I've done or where the church is, frankly. But it has to face probably the most critical moment of its life in my lifetime right now.
Right now. And so, you know, what an opportunity to have a sympathetic but quite hard-eyed person to share that with and share those doubts with. Ailsa, on your side, there was something much more personal that happened to you that Tony helped you deal with. You mentioned your marriage, but your husband became suddenly ill.
Well, he died of a brain hemorrhage, really, with no warning. He'd never been unwell. And I was in Sydney at the time doing book work, so I wasn't with him. And it was devastating. And I have great friends. I mean, I had enormous support and beautiful sisters. But it was interesting that, I suppose, this friendship that had been conducted, you know, at 1,000 kilometres, actually was enormously supportive through that time. And I think it's because, in part, I mean, obviously Tony has great experience of being around grief and death, but also going back to the conversations, we had had conversations about the paedophilia issues, about, you know, the church that had been in some ways pretty, I mean, I wouldn't use the word excoriating, but I mean, we'd been really tough on each other about all sorts of things. And so we'd reached a level, I suppose, of trust about the other person's spirituality, if you want, or their approach to things, but also a level of understanding. And I think Tony was one of the people who was able to understand that for a while there, I mean, I'm Miss Sunshine, I am the eternal optimist, but for a while after Pete died, I did actually understand what it was to not wish to live. And that was really hard to deal with for myself, but hard for the people with whom I'd had a long history. But I think because we'd gone to some quite, I'd been tough on him, he'd come back, you know, sometimes bleeding, there was a level of acceptance that Tony was able to give. And also, I guess he's lived a very long time. And I could never have said that, for instance, to my father. because it would have. But Tony could hear things because as a priest of 50 years, I don't think there's anything I could have said that would have surprised Tony, actually. But he was extraordinary and practical and understood that ritual. I mean, I think both of us have a love of ritual. And Tony understood that ritual could shape things. And I mean, the book is full of stories of little rituals that we both have. But at the time, there was a natural ritual that unfolded just after the funeral when my sister was leaving. And it came out of me not knowing what to do. And Tony, who's a great believer that story is sacred, and of course I believe that too, got me to tell our story in our home. At the end of that, he said, so now what would you like to do?
You mean Pete and your story?
Yeah, Pete's and my story. And he took me through each room of the house and listened endlessly as I told him where, you know, a painting had come from and where a silly trinket had come from. But then at the end of it, he said to me, now what would you like? And I said, I think I want to pray. Now, Tony calls this book A Conversation Between a Believer and an Unbeliever. And he says he doesn't know which is which, but I don't have that habit of saying to someone, would you pray with me? But he sat down and we said a Buddhist prayer that meant something to me, and then we said the Our Father, and Tony said, say the Hail Mary, and then Tony said some lovely words about Pete, and then he asked me if I wanted to say things. And I said the things that were hard about my guilt at not being with him when he died and things. But afterwards, after we'd blown out the candle and everything, I said to Tony, why did I want to say that? Why did I want to say that? And he said, and I've never got over how astute it was, because that prayer belongs to a time from your childhood when everything was safe and nothing bad could happen.
Wow.
And I thought, you know, if nothing else, Catholicism gave me that. It gave me this sort of, I mean, it's given me a whole lot of other things I now understand. But, and to name that, you know, to name that that's what I was wanting. I wanted to go back to when things were safe. It was a beautiful gift. And that came out of a whole lot of letters, you know.
Yeah. Our Father who art in heaven.
Yeah, yeah.
Alistair Piper and Tony Doherty are here. We're talking about their joint book called The Attachment, this unlikely friendship. You know, just to finish, I think this is the wisdom that maybe we can all take from this. Tony, talk to us about how surprising this is, that each of us pass by people every day in the street and workplaces in conversations, and yet we end up often being friends with people who are from the same background, sometimes the same school, the same workplace. We have our neighbourhood barbecues with the people from next door. And yet there's this possibility of such rich relationships if we opened our eyes and ears to each other.
I found myself writing only quite recently about this. Just to use the image, not a terrific image, but we walk an avenue with big high walls on either side. And in that avenue are the people that you've just described, the people who like are the same socioeconomic, you know, same language, et cetera, et cetera. But we can't peep over the walls. And it sounds a bit funny, perhaps a bit theatrical, but I also, coming from quite a different tradition, being a woman, I have to say, quite frankly, you know, allowed me to peep over the walls to a new world out there. And it doesn't begin and end with Ailsa, but we live in this astonishing country of ours, astonishing, in which there is so much to see, but we must make the effort. We must stand on tiptoes to peep over the walls to be with different types of people and that does enlarge your spirit. There's a phrase that I use for myself, to make you yourself more human. I think that's the mystery of the church, by the way, to provide a tradition that would enable us to be more human beings. And might I say to my friend here, my challenging, stimulating,
bossy.
Bossy, yes, there's a few other words. At best, that sort of gift of friendship makes you more human. And for that, I'm enormously grateful.
And also, do you think we should all learn from this and stand on our tippy toes and try to peer over the wall that Tony talks about?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's funny though, isn't it? Because we can try and maybe not make it happen. It's the sort of serendipity of things too, that you have to be on the alert for the thing that comes at you and you pass it by. Someone said to me, it would have been much easier and much more groovy if you'd been in conversation with an imam at the moment, you know. Why did you pick a Catholic priest?
And it was like, and did he have to be that old?
That old. But, you know, the Catholic priest was the one who presented. But it's the thing of stopping. You know, you have to tiptoe or you have to stop. You know, and I think there's one in one of the letters, I actually suddenly realised that what we did was we just stopped for each other for a minute. And in that moment, we kind of saw each other and went, that's interesting. What's going on there? And, yeah, I suppose I'm just enormously grateful that I did, because my life, like as you say, Tony, it's been enlarged exponentially by the conversation.
In this Odd Couple, which is which? Which character are you in the Odd Couple?
Oh, I'm Felix. I'm the pernickety bossy one. He's
Oscar. I
don't
get a choice by the sound of it, anyway.
Yeah, that's right.
Which is quite so typical, so real.
It's a delightful book and kind of a lesson to us all in the power of stopping and listening to each other. Hey, thank you so much for coming in and talking.
Thanks, Richard.
Alistair Piper and Tony Doherty with the book The Attachment, which is out this week.